Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing, available 24/7 at ianmasters.com. And joining us now is Anne Ravel, who is a fellow at the New America Foundation and a professor of law at the University of California, Berkeley, who served on the Federal Election Commission under President Obama. She served as vice chair of the commission in 2014 and chair in 2015 before leaving in 2017. And prior to that, served as chair of the California Fair Political Practices Commission. Welcome to Background Briefing, Anne Ravel.
Thank you very much.
And today, Donald Trump blasted out a tweet attacking Facebook, saying Facebook was always anti-Trump. The networks were always anti-Trump. And then he wrote collusion with a question mark. Is this a tactic that he got from Roy Cohn? In other words, the pot calling the kettle black. You accuse your accuser. If you're guilty, then you just displace the guilt on somebody else. I mean, it seems so extraordinary when Trump himself, during the campaign, praised Facebook, and the campaign spent $70 million on Facebook ads and ran its own live Facebook show. So, he, you know, the same group that he praised, he's now condemning. And I suspect it has something to do with the fact that Facebook had to turn over these phony Russian ads to the Congress and Investigation Committee.
Yes, it is extraordinary, and you're right. Not only did the Trump campaign spend an enormous amount of money on Facebook ads that has been documented because they have to file with the FEC, but we know that most of these Russian ads and Russian disinformation that is truly masquerading as somebody's Facebook page but is actually a paid ad were favorable to Trump and not favorable to Hillary Clinton.
Well, you were very prescient when you were on the FEC in October of 2015, and Revel, at a meeting of the FCC, you said, think of it. Do we want Vladimir Putin or drug cartels to be influencing American elections? And for that, you were ridiculed by your fellow commissioner on Fox News, and then you received death threats shortly thereafter. So walk us through that extraordinary exchange.
Right. Well, there were actually two instances that caused me to receive death threats and misogynist communications and the like. And one of them had to do with just a statement that I made that there was going to be much more political activity on the internet. And so given that our regulations were so weak and exempted much of the political advertising on the internet, that we should discuss it. That was all I said. We should have a discussion. We should bring in technologists and others, academics, to look at the issue and come to some decisions. I made no recommendations about what it was that we were going to do. But for that, my fellow commissioner, Lee Goodman, went on Fox News twice and said that I was trying to censor the internet, that I was like the Chinese censorship board. And then, of course, that was, as we now know, because it happened this way in the election last year, that it is a way of having a dog whistle that then goes to Breitbart and to Drudge, and then from there it gets disseminated out into the crevices of the internet where people respond in a way that they know they're going to respond.
And again, I'm speaking with Anne Ravel, who is a fellow at the New America Foundation and a professor of law at the University of California, Berkeley, who served on the Federal Election Commission under President Obama. She served as vice chair of the commission in 2014 and chair in 2015 before leaving in 2017. And prior to that, served as chair of the California Fair Political Practices Commission. Well, there's also, I think, a tactic here, and I wonder whether you agree with me, that, for example, when the FCC under Reagan got rid of the Fairness Doctrine, which regulated political speech in the media because it had a simple formula. If you are a Rupert Murdoch and own a media outlet and want to use that as your private political soapbox, you have to offer equal time to an opposing point of view. But Murdoch and others lobbied Reagan, and the minute they got rid of the fairness doctrine, right-wing talk radio, Rush Limbaugh and company hit the ground running. They were ready for it. Something similar happened in this last election. There was an attack on Facebook suggesting that they had a liberal bias in their news curation. And unfortunately, 67% of Americans get their information from Facebook, so it has a very, very powerful political influence. As a result of that, Zuckerberg got rid of the human curation of the news, and suddenly fake news just hit the internet like an avalanche. A lot of it, of course, coming from Russia. We don't know at this point how coincidental that was and what the role of the Trump campaign using Cambridge Analytica, Steve Bannon on the board, the owner Mercer being the biggest donor to Trump. That's something that perhaps Mueller, the special counsel, will fill us in on. But something happened there. Would you agree?
I absolutely agree. I do not think that these actions are accidental or disconnected. I think that there is definitely a group of people who have strategized for some time about the issues not only of the internet and free speech, but also with respect to foreign money. So in answer to your other question, and when I spoke about Putin, that also received a lot of nasty responses from not only my fellow commissioners, who were the Republicans, but then out in the internet world. And so it was actually not until I left the agency and saw what was going on during the election that I pieced all these things together and realized that it was all a concerted effort.
And again, I'm speaking with Anne Ravel, who is a fellow at the New America Foundation and a professor of law at the University of California, Berkeley, who served on the Federal Election Commission under President Obama. She served as vice chair of the commission in 2014 and chair in 2015 before leaving in 2017. And prior to that, served as chair of the California Fair Political Practices Commission. What did you make of the letter sent last week, Anne Ravel, by Democrats in the House and Senate to the FEC, urging them to develop new guidance in terms of stopping future foreign attacks on our elections as the Russians conducted through Facebook? And this letter was signed by Senators Martin Heinrich, Ron Wyden, Tom Udall, Elizabeth Warren, Maggie Hassan, Ben Cardin, Al Franken, Jack Reed, Ed Markey, Chris Van Hollen, etc., and along, of course, a lot of House members as well. It seems a bit like the FEC is a bit of a dead letter drop, isn't it? It's been dysfunctional for some time, and it seems that the Republicans really want it to be dysfunctional.
What you're just saying about the FEC is absolutely correct. I think that probably those members of the Senate and House are expressing hope and goodwill and want the FEC to take the actions that they're supposed to take. Although, of course, Senator Udall, who has a bill in to try to reform the FEC, understands very well how dysfunctional it is. And I do not think that they are expecting that there is going to be any thoughtful response to that on the part of the commissioners. But it makes sense for them to communicate that. More importantly, I think, is the Senators Warner and Klobuchar, who are actually talking to people in the campaign finance arena and in other places to try to determine how to deal with the problem of not just Russian intervention in campaigning, but also on the internet, and the particular impact that the lack of either regulation or laws has on the ability of them to just make it the Wild West.
Well, it's pretty clear that there are really serious divisions in this country. I don't know whether you saw Oprah Winfrey's debut on 60 Minutes, but it was extremely alarming. She had a focus group of Trump voters and Hillary Clinton voters and was trying to get some kind of common ground or at least start a dialogue. And you realize how dangerously divided this country is and how Trump is actually inflaming the divisions. You know, he's obviously totally incapable of governing and he's a complete fraud, but he's very clever at dog whistles and manipulating his base, as he did by distracting everybody with this phony crisis over football players kneeling, you know, while the people in Puerto Rico are drowning. It's just extraordinary to watch the cynicism at play here. But I do worry, and you were attacked because of the Breitbart right-wing echo chamber attacked you, and a lot of these people have guns, and you got death threats. How worried are you about this general de-evolution of civility in this country?
I am extremely worried about it. And, it is clear to me that not only is there the incredible polarization, but lack of civility. And, of course, we know the people who before at least thought they had to act with some decorum publicly now don't and are perfectly freed up to take violent actions and walk the streets with weapons. I mean, I just find it to be astounding. But I still believe that there is a vast group of people who have become disassociated from all of this because of that polarization, that it's the people on the extremes who seem to be the most polarized. And then there's a large group of people who just have checked out of our communities and our political system. And that is a real fear, because if it continues that way, that those people don't get engaged, then it's going to be the extremists who are going to win. And those people don't believe in democracy.
And again, I'm speaking with Anne Ravel, who is a fellow at the New America Foundation and a professor of law at the University of California, Berkeley, who served on the Federal Election Commission under President Obama. She served as vice chair of the commission in 2014 and chair in 2015 before leaving in 2017. And prior to that, served as chair of the California Fair Political Practices Commission. Well, in the discussion that Oprah Winfrey was trying to generate with this group of Trump and Hillary Clinton voters, what was so extraordinary was that the Trump voters, really all of them, dismissed out of hand the idea of Russian interference in the elections. They just thought it was fake news, which is what Trump keeps hammering them with.
Right.
But it is a very peculiar political climate we're in, because there is some denial also on the left. You've got the editors of The Nation magazine, for example, basically suggesting that this is an anti-Russian Cold War jihad with no basis. And then you've got all these Republicans in denial or willfully blind to what's happening. And these, of course, are the former Cold Warriors, which is pretty extraordinary. So what's happening in that regard? Why is it that there isn't sufficient outrage in this country about a foreign hostile power attacking the very foundation of American democracy?
Well, I think there's different reasons for different groups. If you look at the Republicans in Congress, it's abundantly clear that those people are taking their marching orders, and we know this, from their donors, from people, very wealthy people, who are dictating what the policies of the federal government need to be. And they are successful in that. There have been studies about this, that there it is the interests of the very wealthy and of the corporations that tend to have absolute success in this country, and no such success for those people who are grassroots or individuals. So that's what's going on in Congress. There was recently an article about how the positions that a lot of the Republicans were taking on the Affordable Care Act were dictated by their donors and not by their constituents. So I think that's a somewhat different animal, because what they're doing is just for political purposes. The other people, it seems, is, you know, it's called fake news, which is a term that I really dislike, because it is really not fake news. It is actually paid for. And so, in my view, it's not just propaganda. It's actually political advertising in another form, a much more insidious form, because it's being used to micro-target people that they know are more likely to be susceptible to this information. And whether that's done on the left or the right, that's one of the problems. As many people have said, there doesn't seem to be a agreement among people about what is true and what isn't true any longer, which is very different from how things were when I was growing up.
Well, it's true. I don't see how a country, particularly a powerful country like the United States, can function if there's no consensus about what is real and what is true. And I think there used to be in the days of Walter Cronkite, but now people do what's called reality shopping. And the whole way that Facebook operates, with 67% of Americans getting their news from Facebook, is frightening, because all it does is reinforce opinions amongst like-minded people. So there really isn't a discourse. But when you mentioned micro-targeting, it's pretty clear that Cambridge Analytica, the firm owned by the reclusive billionaire Robert Mercer, who's the biggest funder to Donald Trump's campaign, and his proteges, Stephen Bannon and Kellyanne Conway, were brought in to rescue Trump's campaign. And we know the influence that they've had and continue to have. My sense is that that's a whole story that has to be uncovered. Perhaps, again, the special counsel will shed some light on it, because they had, Cambridge Analytica had a very important role in Brexit. They had a very important role in this election that's still disputed. And they also had an important role in the recent Kenyan election that was overturned by the Kenyan Supreme Court, where they're having a do-over. I mean, we don't have a constitutional provision in this country to have a do-over. But Hillary Clinton, when asked recently in an interview on Terry Gross's Fresh Air program on NPR, was asked if it turns out that we learn that the Russian interference in our election was much, much greater than we know now, would you consider contesting the results? And she said, I would consider it. So we may have a rough period ahead. What do you think?
Well, I actually think that it is unfortunate that right after the campaign, right after the election, that Hillary Clinton's lawyers determined that there should not even be an audit of the results, because what was done was not an audit. There were some recounts, but nobody audited the voting machines and that had paper trails. And I do think that that was unfortunate, because it would have been much more significant to do soon after the election. Later, it's going to be very difficult. I mean, what it's going to do, of course, is put us, as you say, in some turmoil if we find that there actually was hacking of voting machines per se, in addition to the micro-targeting, where people in swing counties, not just swing states, but swing counties, were targeted to change their votes because someone on Facebook was pretending to be a Bernie person or a Black Lives Matter person, spreading lies about Hillary Clinton and saying, don't vote for her, don't go. So, all of those things have worked together undoubtedly to affect what the outcome of the election was, and just to undermine our democratic process.
Well, just in closing, I find it extraordinary that the Department of Homeland Security had been sitting on information for months and months and months, which they just dumped on Friday night, which is when you do a news dump, that the Russians were meddling in the elections in 21 states, including the key swing states of Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, Ohio, Florida, and Virginia. I mean, isn't that amazing?
It is shocking. I think it's all shocking, actually, that there was information known even prior to the election that was never divulged to anybody. I know people on the Election Assistance Commission that actually has some sort of oversight over voting machines, and they didn't receive any of that information, much less the states receiving it. So I think this is so central to the fairness of our electoral process and to, you know, the ability for people to have confidence in the vote. It's stunning to me that it was not released.
But what can you do about the underlying mentality, as far as I can tell? You know, the Republicans managed to get all their people out, every last voter out. The Democrats have a hard time getting their people out and inspiring them. But the Republican strategy seems to be through voter suppression, et cetera, and unlimited money via Citizens United to maintain some advantage. And I recall the famous 67% remark by Mitt Romney, the country's divided between makers and takers. And there's this assumption, I think, on the part of a lot of Republicans that minorities and other, you know, unworthy, parasitic Americans simply don't have the same rights as we do. So how do you reestablish this notion that we're all men are created equal and endowed with their inalienable rights of life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, etc.? How do you get back to that concept, because I think that that's what drives it, because there's something so un-American about what they're doing, but you can't shame these people, as far as I can tell.
Yeah, you're right. I concur with you. My view is that there needs to be more effort throughout the country in engaging those people who are now feeling disempowered, who are feeling as if their vote doesn't matter, that they don't need to participate, and ensure that those people feel like they have a voice, that they do, that what they say and have what they think, and when they vote, it is really important. Unless people feel part of the community and feel that they can have some leadership, and the word is agency, and I think it's right, some agency in our country, those people are not going to vote. I mean, the numbers, even in this very contested election, the number of people that voted in this country was abysmally low. So it's very important, I think, for people who care about the one person, one vote ideal, that in order to make this a truly representative democracy, those people have to be represented. They have to go vote.
Well, Anne Ravel, I thank you very much for joining us here today.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Likewise. And again, I've been speaking with Anne Ravel, who's a fellow at the New America Foundation and a professor of law at the University of California, Berkeley, who served on the Federal Election Commission under President Obama. She served as vice chair of the commission in 2014 and chair in 2015 before leaving in 2017. And prior to that, served as chair of the California Fair Political Practices Commission. This has been Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters. I'd like to thank producer Graham Fitzgibbon. This program is available for podcasting at ianmasters.com. We can also contact me, and I'll be back again tomorrow with another Background Briefing. Bye for now. Time.